All right, boys, welcome back in hour two here on a Tuesday. It's Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D. Mason, the Constable. A lot to get to this morning. We'll get back to some hockey. We'll get to some college hoops with Jimmy Dykes. Not Sonny Dykes, Jimmy Dykes. He'll join us coming up at 9 o'clock this morning. But continuing on the conversation, and of course you can get in at 615-737-1025, Arthur Smith, the new offensive coordinator for the Titans, and I threw out the question before the break, was he the top target all along, and did they do any type of investigative due diligence beyond just gauging people's interest?
Well, we do know for certain that they had conversations with other candidates, and I would be shocked if they hadn't had conversations with other candidates. I think Arthur and Pat O'Hara were always two guys that were near the top of the list because how much, and John Robinson and Mike Vrabel has said as much through the entire process, how much stability and continuity matter to them. And that is all very critical and obviously a huge check mark and a plus in the Arthur Smith category. So I think they may have gone out and done their diligence, looked at some names, talked to some names. Some guys said no. Some guys said, yeah, I'm really interested. They weighed their options and thought, you know what, I still think it's better. We've already got a guy that we like more. And again, I think it speaks to Arthur Smith's ability for to make it through all of the regime changes and all of the turmoil that this organization has gone through. I think it speaks to his ability that Mike Munchak saw something in him, hired him, and he did a good job. So much so that Ken Whisenhunt, a totally different dude, we can all agree, Derek, liked him so much so that he kept him and elevated him. And then Mike Mularkey liked him so much that he kept him and elevated him. And then Mike Vrabel liked him so much that he kept him and elevated him. I think, and Matt LaFleur, by all accounts, was going to take him to Green Bay with him to be his offensive coordinator. So I think there's ample evidence to show that he's a qualified candidate. Does that mean he's going to be a great play caller? We all have no idea.
So you're by far the highest of the three of us on the move.
I'm cautiously optimistic. Okay. I think it's a risk.
Just for the sake of like dumb entry level radio, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you like it?
I'm like in a 7.
Okay.
6.8.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. All right. Like, I'm more like a 5.
I don't think it's this splash home run where we're all going to run to the Twitter machine and scream how much we love this. But guess how many things in sports happen where we universally as the media love them and they turn out to be totally nonsensically awful. Like this whole Rick Barnes thing and like the rehashing of the people that thought, which is everybody. By the way, the Vols were picked 13th in the preseason polls 2 years ago.
Incredible.
Meaning every single person in the media was wrong about them. I think the amount of times
13th in the conference, by the way.
13th in the SEC,
yes.
Yeah. I think the amount of times that people sort of universally believe in a hire or disagree with a hire, and then that is proven wrong, is probably more than people think. So I'm not sure I'm going to take my cues from the rest of the media world. I think there are major questions about this, major risks about this. But there's also a lot to like about it, so I'm trying to be fair to Arthur Smith.
I mean, I think I think they had this pegged a long time ago. But they were trying to give me reasons why not to hire him. That's what they were looking for. What is the reason why should I hire him? Because I thought that this thing went on a little bit too long. And I think we said it last week that this must be an in-house thing because it's just taking too long. Either they found someone in-house already and they're trying to figure out, you know, why not to hire them, or they're waiting for the playoffs to be done. So now we come to find out they hire from within. It's hard. I don't want to hear the, you know, people that you know, that have a stake in the Tennessee Titans talk about Arthur Smith, because it's not that they're going to say, oh, he's a bad coach. And
can't believe we hired this guy.
I couldn't care less what they say.
Yeah, like,
honestly,
what's Marcus
going to
say?
I don't want to hear what they say.
But you got to read between the lines.
Everybody's going to, if he's a likable guy, if you are a likable guy, then everybody's going to say good things about you. Mm-hmm. If you're not a likable guy, then they're going to say, well, yeah, they're going to pick and choose what they want. I just want to see this thing unfold because all of this hinges on whether Marcus gets better or not. And if he doesn't, then why? What was the hire for? Because I thought the hire for the LaFleur hire was to get Marcus better. Well, it didn't work out as well as we thought it would. Okay, so what you're telling me now that you hire Arthur Smith, are you hiring him to now be the guy that can elevate Marcus? Or are you hiring him because he thinks more like you, Vrabel?
Or why can't run the football just simply,
and you know, we're gonna play this phone booth.
Why can't
type
we have
of
an
offense
where we can throw when we want, we can run when we want? We're gonna dictate the terms of the game. Not worried about LaFleur and this pass offense. Not worried about malarkey and this exotic smash mouth garbage. I want to be able to do both. I want to be able to run Derrick Henry when I need to. And I want to be able to throw with Marcus when I need to. And I don't want to be under this umbrella of, well, we do it this way.
So, touchdowns. The tight ends will be a focal point of this offense. The tight ends and the running backs. So
They've also got talent, I feel, for
those guys on the outside.
They drafted him
fifth overall in Corey Davis. And I don't think they are going to, again, because I've seen it, and it seems like this same book is being written over again. Or we're reading the same book when it comes to the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, the book of mediocrity?
I'm not going to say mediocrity.
Wow.
Because I think Fisher, when we were healthy, Fisher had good teams.
I'm talking about this recent last 3 years.
Nine and seven is a little bit above mediocre. I think it's okay. It's good. It's not mediocre. It's good.
If the Tennessean or whatever like publication, whatever the biggest like website is in this city, let's just say the Tennessean, if they put a poll up today, or if we went around the entire city of Nashville,
you're going to trust the fans' opinion.
I think on a scale of 1 to 10, most people would say middle of the road, which goes along with everything that this team does. Middle of the road quarterback, slightly above average seasons of 9 and 7. Everything's just kind of like, it's right in that middle area.
And I think they're on the upper end of middle of the road because, again, they were a couple of plays away from winning the division this year. But that's the way that's the way the NFL works. You're a couple of plays away from being 6 and 10. You're a couple of plays away from being, 10 and 6, 11 and 5 and winning your division. I don't think this hire has as much to do, I don't think the direct impact with Arthur Smith is going to be as much on Marcus as much as it is on the entirety of the offense.
But I don't know.
Well, so what I was going to say is
I think
the receiving core, the tight ends, the running game, by all accounts, Arthur Smith is who was pushing Matt LaFleur to, let's bring Derrick Henry back into this. Let's run the football a little bit more, and that the younger players on the offense that he is very relatable to, by all accounts, again, very relatable in a meeting room. Players like working and interacting with him because let's be very clear. There's a difference between standing up in a corporate boardroom and trying to motivate a bunch of 45-year-olds who are trying to go out and sell pharmaceuticals than it is to get up in front of a meeting room of 35 offensive NFL players who are between the age of 22 and 28. You have to be relatable to those young people.
Mm-hmm.
And he, by all accounts, he's very good at that. And if that is a part of this equation, I think he and O'Hara with Marcus and the leadership of LaJuan, I think all of that helps develop the younger players on the offense around Marcus. The question, again, my only question about Arthur Smith, because all of these coaches, no matter who you talk about, whether it's DeFilippo or, name a coach that they could have interviewed, they're all kind of about the same. What play calling comes down to is, do you have that innate ability to read a game, how it's unfolding, and outthink the other guy on the other side? And that is something, no matter what your pedigree is, no matter what your resume is, there's no way to know that until the actual games happen. And you said it, Derek. We're all going to watch this thing unfold, and I'm fascinated to see it as well. So it all depends. That will be can you call plays on Sundays? And that's something we don't know until it actually happens.
Okay, we'll come back. When we talk about the Titans, we always seem to talk about Marcus Mariota, and then we talk about Derrick Henry. Well, why not put them together, right? Like, Is the success of Marcus Mariota dependent upon Derrick Henry? We'll tie them together at the hip when we come back. And you're going to hear from Eddie George. He was on with Buck Rising on Friday on Tackling Music City. Stick around for what Eddie George had to say about Derrick Henry. That's next here on Morning Drive. All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So how important will Derrick Henry's season be to the success of Marcus Mariota in this new offense with Arthur Smith? You would think they want to be more balanced, more run-oriented, run game, play action, get Derrick established, and then do what Marcus does best,
which is
play action.
Which is all things Mike Vrabel said at his press conference prior to hiring Matt LaFleur.
Yes. And I think
he said, we want to run. We want to give him easy access throws. We want to give play action. We want to go screen game. Those are the things that we wanted to do, and that's largely what it looked like. It just looked modern in 2018-ish. It just wasn't always as productive due to a bunch of extenuating circumstances.
And if this leads to 24, 25 points per game, nobody will care. If this is 18, 19 points a game and we're like 26th in the league in points scored, then it'll be an issue.
If they score one more touchdown a game, so if you go from 19 points a game to like 25 points a game.
No, they're at 12-14.
You go to one of the top six or seven offenses in the league.
If that defense is as good as it was last year.
I think people don't realize the margin for error is like a field goal per game. If they kick just a field goal per game, they go from what people perceive to be as one of the worst offenses scoring, and they become like 16th or 17th in the NFL, which is right in the middle of the pack, which is where, of course, you think most of the team is, Nick. So it doesn't take a lot of extra. Like, they're close. It's not like they're far away. They had the 7th best rushing attack in the NFL last year. They were the least penalized offense in the entire league, which makes them the most disciplined offense in the entire league. Marcus was hurt. The offensive line sucked. They lost Delanie Walker. If you put all those things back on the field, are you telling me you couldn't get one more field goal out of that offense? Of course you could. Mm-hmm. And then we're not complaining at all about Matt LaFleur.
So let's get to Eddie George. He was on with Buck Rising on Friday on Tackling Music City. And Buck asked him about the advice Eddie George gave to Derrick Henry. And here's his answer.
Well, I'm going to be the first one to say I really didn't have anything to do with this turnaround. It was all Derrick's effort. He reached out for some advice. I gave it to him, and I gave him a lot of respect and credit for reaching out and getting advice, doing a self-check, an assessment of where his game was, and really to be honest about his game and where he was. He asked me to be very frank and blunt with him, and I wanted to give him that, and that was it. But he gets all the credit for, I guess, humbling himself to seek out advice. And he was the one that had a shift in thought in terms of how his approach was going to happen. And he went out and executed that to a T.
That was Eddie George on Friday. So let me ask you guys this, because we talked about how the offense will affect Marcus. Is there a transition and a learning curve for a running back like Derrick Henry going from what LaFleur did to what Arthur Smith wants to do?
No, because I think what Arthur Smith wants to do is feature Derrick Henry in his offense. So this is a good move for Derrick Henry because he proved over the last seven games of the season, that he could be a running back in this league that can be productive. And I don't think it's going to be a huge shift or a huge learning curve for Derrick Henry. I think this offensive line, they like it when they're running the ball. This is because this is not an offensive line that was built to pass protect. Now, they do a okay job at pass protecting, but this is an offensive line that they drafted to run the football. I've always said each team has an identity and a core and a foundation about themselves that gets passed down from coach to coach to coach to coach. I couldn't care less if you are trying to throw the ball all willy-nilly around the field or not. There's a foundation set with a team, that the next coach inherits. And for the Tennessee Titans, it's playing good defense and running the football. And they got back to that. When they tried to deviate from that, it didn't work out so well. But they got back to the essence of who they truly are, who this organization truly is. And that's defense and running football. And it seems to work out well for them. So I don't see this whole Arthur Smith thing affecting Derrick Henry in the offensive line. Any, I think it's going to be Marcus and the receive. I think it's going to be the receiving core that has to make the adjustment, because what they thought was going to be with LaFleur and what it will be with Arthur Smith is totally two different things.
I'm with you on the Derrick Henry thing. I think the Derrick Henry thing is more about Derrick Henry. I mean, you heard it in the cut there. Eddie George got a call. Derrick Henry was willing to be humble and self sort of evaluative, if that's evaluative, if that's the word, self-evaluating and willing to take constructive criticism and get better. And I give I'm with Eddie George on this. I give Derrick Henry all the credit in the world for morphing and evolving and changing his game. And if he's going to be that player and he's that – listen, he already had 1,000 yards. It's not like he's that far away from being a 1,200-yard back. He almost had 1,100 yards this year. And we rip on this offense like it was terrible. Mm-hmm. He almost had 1,100 yards this year. I think it's all there in front of Derrick Henry if Derrick Henry wants it. And I think I'm with Derrick. This is good for the running game and for those players. I think it's good for – I don't think this has much of an impact on Marcus as people want to make it. Everybody thought the LaFleur hire was for Marcus, and I'm not even going to disagree with that. This hire is about the offense as a whole, and it's, all right, we need to maximize all of the different pieces that we have, and some of that is Derrick Henry taking it upon himself to be better, and he did last year, and he deserves credit for that. And so if he's going to be that same player, then I think we're going to see a really good running game next season, just like we did. By the way, 7th in the NFL in rushing this year.
Mm-hmm.
They were a good rushing team this year, especially at the end of the season. So,
well, because it was skewed in December.
No question.
The ridiculous numbers inflated everything.
But guess how you win in the NFL? You win in December. So I don't care when it happened. The point is they were the 7th best rushing offense in the NFL, one of the best rushing attacks in the league. And some of that was Arthur Smith sort of pulling Matt LaFleur a little bit closer into this direction. But the other big factor is Derrick Henry taking it upon himself to be a different player. And if he's that player again for a full season, a full offseason, and is ready to go, watch out. That's going to be dangerous. And guess what helps Marcus the most? Not the OC, not the play calling. Not a great running game will give Marcus all of the time he needs to work and operate. I think this impacts the receiving core, to your point, Derek, a little bit more than anybody else. I think O'Hara's work with Marcus is important to maintaining stability. But I think Arthur Smith is more about the offense as a whole, not just – He's not going to be sitting there with Marcus developing Marcus the way O'Hara needs to be doing.
But isn't that
– it's about the offense as a whole.
Isn't that – and this is so funny because I was always – you know, growing up, you see things and you see change. And my mom would say the more things change, the more they stay the same. It's true. But we bitched and moaned, not us on this show, but fans. Oh, malarkey. Yeah. He's so old and tired, the offense, yada, yada, yada. Well, I can frankly remember when Marcus had his best season in the National Football League, and it was under who? Malarkey?
2016.
Absolutely. And why? Because they ran the ball effectively. Okay? Fast forward, they bring in Boy Genius, and the offense doesn't work quite as well. Now, when the offense goes more back to malarkey, I don't want to hear nobody's mouth, okay? I really don't. I don't want to hear nobody's mouth.
I think it's going to be in between.
No, but it was in between with malarkey because Marcus had his best season to date.
And they missed the playoffs.
But they were 9-7. That wasn't his fault. But he had his best season, mm-hmm. 3,500 yards, 20-some touchdowns, 10 interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterback rating was high. Under who?
Malarkey.
Mike Malarkey, because yep. Mike Malarkey married both the run game and the passing game. In this league, the passing game works when you can effectively run the football. Marcus is one of the best play-action passing quarterbacks in the National Football League.
So let's play
get
this
back
out
to
real
it.
Quick. Think about this right now. If they run the ball well and Marcus is play action, does this affect Marcus's contract? I mean, if Marcus is efficient but doesn't put up the numbers, do they get him at a better deal because of the system?
But I think
they still get him at a 20-something million dollar
is
clip.
That phrase right there, and I don't think anyone in Nashville is going to acknowledge this, not the fans at least. If Marcus is efficient but the numbers aren't there, that's what we just got. He had a quarterback rating north of 90, which is exactly what he did in his first two seasons.
No, but he has to throw more than 13 touchdowns.
I'm not denying that, but he just asked a question. And his question, Nick asked the question, if he's as efficient as ever but doesn't have the production, the counting stats, which is about the number of throws and games you play in, because he only threw the ball 330 times last year, which is half as much as the quarterbacks who are slinging it around throw the football. If you're talking about efficiency with each throw versus total number of throws, then you have to look at this past season and say he had his highest completion percentage by a large margin. He had his highest yards per attempt by tied his career high for yards per attempt at 7.6 yards per attempt. He had a quarterback rating north of 90, which is exactly where it was in his first two seasons. He was, by all efficiency measures, right back to the same player he was in year one and year two. That the outlier from an efficiency standpoint is year three. And that's when the offensive line was terrible, blah, 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 blah. Well, the offensive line wasn't all that good last year either, and he still bounced way back up in efficiency numbers. Now, if we're going to measure him based on counting stats, then it's more about the number of throws you make and the number of games you play, and that gets to another issue with Marcus, which is health. But if he's going to play in an offense that throws the ball 22 times a game versus an offense that throws the ball 42 times a game, we will have different expectations for Marcus's statistics.
Hey, newsflash. Marcus' best year overall was 2016. Now, was his completion...
Was it's
his,
not even close.
Was his completion percentage like it was this year? No, it wasn't. But he still was a 61, 62% passer. But his quarterback rating was the highest. His touchdowns to interceptions, 26-9.
Yeah.
His best season was 2016. And why was that? He threw the ball 451 times. 451 times. So when you say Mike Malarkey didn't throw the damn football, what the hell are you looking at?
Well, Stafford threw it 700.
But it doesn't matter. He threw the ball the most times in his career in 2016. And people complained. That's why you don't listen to fans when they say things, because they don't know a damn thing.
Agree with that.
615-737-1025. That's the number for you, the fan. If you want to get at Derek Mason, 615-737-1025. We'll come back. We'll take your calls. And also, Mace, you said something about running the ball and playing great defense. I've got a beef with just that phrase and that cliche. We'll get into that when we come back here on Morning Drive. Welcome back into Morning Drive, 7:33 on a Tuesday here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D-Mace, and the constable, Chase McCabe. So, D-Mace, you said it, and every football guy is guilty of it. It's one of the most uttered cliches in all of football when we talk about philosophy and how you want to go about winning games. And people say, well, I want to run the ball and play great defense. And I just want to bring this up on a day where I'm not really feeling the Arthur Smith hire. If they do go back to the Malarkey style and ground and pound, play defense, and I feel like there's, you know, well, we're going to limit turnovers, we're going to play field position and all this nonsense. Have you ever heard a guy say, well, we're going to throw it a lot, but we want to play bad defense? Like, why is it always, well, we're going to play great defense because we run the ball?
Isn't that what the Kansas City Chiefs do?
You think Sean Payton says, I'm going to have Drew Brees throw it 42 times a game, but we're going to get scorched on defense?
That was the first 12 years of Drew Brees' career. Now they've gotten good on defense. No, we need to do a whole show where we just, what are the things we really want to hear from coaches? And the number one for me is on recruiting, because National Signing Day is coming up in a couple of weeks. I want to hear a coach step to the podium on National Signing Day and say, you know what, we missed on all the best players we were trying to get, and we did not fill the needs we needed to fill for our position in our depth chart, and we're really disappointed with our recruiting haul. I just want to hear one coach step up and say something like that on National Signing Day, which would be hilarious. Here's the thing I would push back on with both of you guys. I don't think they're going back to some archaic, you know, Mike Malarkey style ground and pound. I think they will use the running game more, but there's no indication that this is going to, I think this is a middle ground between this modern cliche Sean McVay, Matt LaFleur offense and this old school Malarkey exotic smash mouth. There's a middle ground in there where you can have both. You can do the running game. You can execute a power rushing attack because Derrick Henry is finally starting to sort of use his physical size and speed and power. The offensive line is playing better, and Marcus stays healthy, so therefore they've got the passing game to go with it. So the irony of all ironies in this entire conversation about Marcus is in his worst season is the only season they made the playoffs. Like, I don't – this is how weird the NFL is. In his worst season, by every single metric, counting numbers, efficiency numbers, whatever you want to call it, he led the NFL in comebacks and fourth quarter comebacks and got his team to the playoffs. In all the other seasons where he was a far more efficient player, they didn't make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to making the playoffs as a defining thing, it's pretty hard to not sort of go deeper into the weeds. So I think we're in store for a middle ground, and that I think is a sound strategy from Mike Vrabel. What we do not know, and I'm going to harp on this all day, I'm going to sound like a broken record, what we do not know is how you, Arthur Smith, handle the moment, 3rd and 7, when your other 3rd and 7 plays haven't worked all game and the defense has clearly got you figured out from a play calling standpoint. How do you adjust, and what does your gut instinct tell you to call on that 3rd and 7 late in the fourth quarter? Because that is what you don't know about any coach until they actually take the reins of an offense. You just don't know how they're going to call plays in the game until the game itself. You can practice all you want to on film. You can sit in that room and pretend to call plays, but until you're in a game calling plays, we're all just sort of guessing at what it's going to look like and be like. And all we can do, like Derek said, I'm interested to watch it unfold because that's all we can do with Arthur Smith and the offense.
I do feel like he'll be aggressive from the standpoint of kind of just going with the flow of Mike Vrabel, because last year we saw Vrabel, he rolled the dice, he went for it, he would go for it on fourth down. I don't think we might get a team that wants to be balanced and mix the run with the pass relatively evenly. I don't think we're going to get a conservative offensive coordinator. Like, I think he will inherently, by working under Vrabel, be aggressive in nature.
I
think that's a good thing.
Yeah. I think a lot of it... this is going to be a play action offense, because history tells me within the last 4 years, and I'm just going back to Marcus's numbers. Now, granted, they didn't make the playoffs, but they were 9-7, had a winning season. They didn't make the playoff by a game, but Marcus is effective when the load is taken off of him. When he can turn around and hand the ball off, first it was DeMarco Murray, and now it's Derrick Henry. When he can do that and suck those linebackers up and throw over the top of them, that's when Marcus is at his best. I think now Vrabel understands that, and he looks at it and says, you know what, this is what we need to get back to. We're gonna play. We're gonna play good defense. That's just the way things go. And in order to give ourselves an opportunity to win, we got to play good defense. But we got to run the football. We got to play action. Because if they are effective at running the football, we will see the numbers that Marcus had his second season, where he put up, 3,400 yards. His completion rating, it might even be high. It might not be as high as it was last year because I believe they're going to take more shots down the field.
If he's 64% or better, I'm good.
Even if Marcus is like, if he's somewhere in the 60s, I'm good. If they're getting chunk plays, if they're moving the ball down the field, if he's not throwing interceptions.
Oh, if they're scoring 28 points a game and he's 61%, I'm fine.
I want to see the Chargers offense. You know why I want to see the Chargers offense? Because Phillip Rivers is damn good at play action because they run the football very effectively. And when he goes down the field, he's taking chunks. And they are plays called specifically designed off the run. And they are more than likely guys are going to be open. So with that being said, I hope they do go back to what they did 3 years ago. Because what it did was Marcus threw more touchdowns, less interceptions. He got sacked less. They still had a winning record, but they didn't go to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So if that formula with what they are able to do on defense, if that formula is replicated again, I think you will see a team that will win 10, 11 games as opposed to 9 games.
You know, one of the things you always say, Nick, is you think a lot of people look at this. I think a lot of fans, and I agree with what Derek ended last segment with, is fans, I think, have looked at this and said, oh, Marcus is wasting our good team. I think it's the other way around. I think a lot of the injuries and the issues on offense are wasting Marcus. He led the NFL this year in sack percentage, meaning because they didn't drop back a whole lot. He only threw the ball 330 times, which is like 30th in the NFL, one of the lowest attempts totals in the NFL. He was sacked 11.3% of the time. That's number one in the league. He was sacked more than one-tenth of the time he dropped back to pass. You cannot expect any quarterback to be great in that situation. So what you need is you need a balance. You need a balance of the efficiency of last year and the productivity of 3 years ago with the playoff run of 2 years. Like, you need it all to happen in the same season. And that's sort of what people are frustrated about. You have the great statistical production in year two. You have terrible statistical production in year three, but you make the playoffs, and you lead all these great comebacks. In the third year, you're the most efficient you've been as a quarterback, but you don't have the great stats because you're not throwing the ball a ton, because you're injured, and because the offensive line sucks, and you miss the playoffs because Andrew Luck is really good. You need all that stuff to happen in 1 year, and that's what Titans fans are looking for. I think that's fair to ask for that. I don't think it's Marcus's fault that it hasn't happened all in one season.
615-737-1025. Let's get to Chris in Laverne, who's got some thoughts on the OC. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning, bud. Go ahead.
What up?
Yeah, you know, when I first heard about the hire myself, I thought, yeah, this is a very typical Titan-esque type move. You know, predictable, you know, saw this coming a mile away. And I guess the thing that kind of got me was, why did it take so long? They could have made this move weeks ago. You know, maybe they were probably, like you said, doing their due diligence, looking at some other candidates and things like that. Or
why does that matter, though, to you, Chris? Can I ask you, Chris, why that matters, though? Like, why does an extra week of thinking about it and doing diligence matter? Honestly.
Now, and that's a very fair point. You know, why does it matter? You know, you want to have all your ducks in a row, have the right guy. You know, want to make sure of things. But I guess that's just the timing of it, I think, got me. But, you know, again, I'm going to give him a fair shot because, you know what, he's done quality control on both sides of the ball, breaking down film and things like that. You know, has a rapport with some of the players. I mean, Taylor Wan and Delanie Walker have given rave reviews of this hire. But, again, it does all come down to, like you said, that moment. Can he call the plays and be effective doing so? And, you know, you gotta win first down. You know, you got to call the right play that puts us maybe in second and four or, you know, at worst, third and three or something like that. And he's got to – and what does he see when he sees the different defenses on the field that we're going to go up against? Is he able to have Marcus an idea of, hey, you know, if you see this defense, you can audible to this play, and this should work. So it's really going to come down to that moment, and it's going to come down to what Arthur and Marcus see. And if they're on the same page, this team can really take off, and the others can rally around that. So, you know, I think this may turn out to be a decent hire. We're going to, you know, wait and see. But I guess, like I said, it was just the timing of it and everything. But I'm willing to give him a fair shot. Let's take a look and see what happens. It can't get really any worse.
All right. There he is, Chris and Laverne.
He's going to give him a fair shot.
Get worse.
Yeah, and I just I don't think I just don't think the timing is that. So how about this? If I'm a Titans fan, I would not worry about the timing. It's not like college where you're trying to recruit players, right? Like, you need an identity on offense to try to recruit players and – hey, this is what our offense is going to look like. Come play for us. In the NFL, it's different. I just don't think it's that important. You can take your time to get the right guy. They knew they could hire Arthur whenever they wanted to, and they went out and did their diligence, and they came back and said, we're going to go with Arthur. So I don't think there's really – I would not be concerned if I'm a Titans fan about the timing of it all.
All right, when we come back, we're going to revisit Sunday's debacle because I have a proposal for football fans. We'll do that next here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Top of the hour, we'll get back to all the big news of the day. Preds with a great win, the Vols number one, and of course the Titans OC search has come to a close. But I was thinking about this yesterday because everybody was complaining about officiating and changing the format of overtime. I want to go back to the officiating thing.
People talked about those two things in this country?
Yeah, rumor has it. That was like the hot topic of the day in sports talk radio across the country, no matter what market you're in. But with the officiating debacle on Sunday, I just want to say this. Here's my proposal flat out. Why not have replay for everything? Now, I said that during the break, and Braden, your answer was what?
I'll stop watching football.
Because why?
I listen, especially in college, pro games are very, NFL games are very good about staying in their 3 hour and 8 minute time window. I cannot. One of the major problems, one of my only problems with college football is that they're 3.5, 4 hour football games. If you are also subjective calls just shouldn't be reviewed. I'm okay with there being some element of, man, this is so egregious. We need to get the refs together and they can sort of stop it. Maybe take a peek at the big board while it's being replayed in the building.
So put that into use this past Sunday.
And yeah, and like that was such an egregious call. It's such an important, or maybe in the final 2 minutes, you can have one challenge per game on pass interference or something. You cannot have holding calls be reviewed.
No, because you can call holding on every play.
I mean, I don't want a 6 hour football
game.
But
the pass interference stuff that affects a game, the defenseless receiver, which also could have been called on that play. I just don't want to hear from people, and I know we're in 2019, and people now have the attention span of a mosquito. I get it. It shouldn't be an excuse. The game's too long. I don't have the patience. I don't have the attention span. If you have my whole premise, and this is the same thing with baseball, if you have the technology to get it right, isn't it worth a couple of extra minutes?
Well, but subjective calls don't have a right or wrong.
My thing is, I don't want... And because had this not happened, people wouldn't be fussing about replay on pass interference. They just wouldn't be.
But it was such an egregious error. And Jared said yesterday that the ref just didn't have the courage to throw the flag because he didn't want to, you know, affect the outcome. Whether you didn't see it or you didn't have the guts to throw the flag, regardless, you made a drastic error.
I don't want pass interference to be replayed.
Yeah,
I agree. Because every pass down the field will get replayed.
Well,
every
then
close
put a caveat
pass
on it. The final 4 minutes of each half.
It's not even the final 4 minutes. If you want to replay pass interference, then just do it the last 2 minutes of a drive. At the end of the game.
So
I don't want
quarter,
to see.
Yeah, so then you guys are okay with the human element errors.
Exactly, because it's football. Things are going to happen because it's a Pandora's box. When you open that box, you start reviewing pass interference. Then you want to review something else. Then you want to review something else. I'm with Braden. I don't want to sit through a game where a coach is throwing a flag for every pass interference, man. Yeah. Like, seriously. Like, if this hadn't happened, people wouldn't be outraged. And people wouldn't, oh, let's change the rules.
Well, and what did you say yesterday about the review on the Edelman punt return? You're like, once it gets past 30, like, once you've watched it three times and you don't know, the answer is it's inconclusive.
Exactly.
You don't need more than 30 seconds to review a call. Every single call should be you get three looks at it. You look at it three times, and if you know definitively, then you know the right answer and you make the call. Listen, if you wanted to put a caveat in where in the final 2 minutes you could throw a challenge on a call that is deemed, you know, use some language that somebody comes up with better than I am, obviously, right now. But here's what I really think should happen. Look at what happens in baseball, right? When one guy sort of doubts the call, and I completely disagree with Stillman. I don't think it's the courage of the referee to throw a flag. I think that's garbage. I think it was a bang-bang play. It happened fast. They missed it. It happens because people are human and they make mistakes. But what they should do is they should gather up into a huddle like baseball umps do, and they go, well, what did you see? Well, what did you see? What did you see? And in that moment, they allow themselves to calm down, really think about what they saw, confirm all of the views, and then they all go, oh, he was out. Mm-hmm. Oh, he was safe. Oh, it was a home run. Oh, it was it. Like the baseball has it right in this sense. When there's a subjective call that maybe they get wrong, they huddle up and they take 10 seconds to talk about it. It doesn't take long. They just go, hey, did you see it right? What did you see? What did you see, Bob? Hey, Joey, what did you see? Hey, Bill, what did you see? And they go, Well, I saw he was safe. I saw he was safe.
Well, yeah,
I've
never been like
Boom,
a fan
they're
of,
done with it.
I've never said like for baseball you have to be able to review balls and strikes. That would be ridiculous. But I mean, to me in football, at some point, whether it's the final 4 minutes of a game, the final 2 minutes of each half, maybe give a coach one like unlimited challenge per game where he can challenge virtually anything except for like a holding, which again, you could call on every single play. You know, maybe you challenge a neutral zone infraction, whatever it might be, false start.
Well, but a neutral zone infraction and a false start are things that actually, like, it's not subjective, right? They're objective. You're either across the line or you're not. Like, the ball either crosses the plane or you're not.
Yeah,
you either exactly, dude. You either catch the pass and it hits the ground and it bobbles or you don't. Like, there's subjective stuff and there's objective stuff. And a pass interference call
I would just like to see an expanded menu of replay opportunities. And to me, if you have a bad attention span, that's a you problem.
So here's the Pandora's box, mm-hmm. that these coaches that are lobbying and these fans that are lobbying, it should have been a pass interference. Let's get a rule.
Well, it should
have been. All right. Here's the thing.
Does anybody disagree?
No, it was a pass interference, yeah.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Okay. Say to the last 2 minutes of the game, you're going downfield, you throw this deep pass, you catch it. And it was some jostling.
Ooh, I know where you're going with this.
You catch it. And then
the other coach,
said, and then find out the receiver pushed off slightly.
Offensive pass.
No. You can't
triple stamp a double stamp.
Yes, you can.
Nick, you're wrong.
In this instance, you can. You can't just say, this rule is made for the offensive guys, and we're just gonna replay it to see if it was a defensive pass interference. No. If I see a push on the receiver, if I see him push off and catch the football,
I'm challenging.
It's offensive pass interference, and the ball's coming back. Huh? See,
the
fans
rule will get
don't
abused.
Want that.
The
fans,
rule,
exactly.
It will get abused.
Fans and coaches don't want that. They just want, my guy got grabbed, and it was a pass. Now, if it was blatant, yes.
Again,
but
I just
don't want it.
In this moment, because this is the egregious moment, I just want those four guys, those five guys, those six guys to huddle up and maybe take a peek at the big Jumbotron. Don't admit it. Don't tell anybody. You know what I mean? Like, hey, Joe, what'd you see over there? Well, Bill, I'm not sure what I saw. And then Joey, meanwhile, has got one eye on the Jumbotron, and he goes, guys, it was pretty clear that we missed the pass interference. Maybe we should throw it. And then, boom, throw the flag. Mm-hmm. And then you go, hey, and then what's the excuse after the game? Well, we huddled together. We conferred with each other, and we all thought that we missed the call, so we made the call, pass interference, first down, Saints. And you don't need any official process. It can sort of be off the books to try to make sure only in very specific circumstances that call gets avoided.
All right, real quickly to wrap up the hour, John in the Borough, you got like 30 seconds. Go ahead, John.
Hey, guys, I like the discussion, but here's my point. We're talking objective versus subjective. We keep on talking about subjective calls. This, to me, was objective. Three different penalties could have been called: pass interference, helmet to helmet, or defenseless receiver. That takes it out of the subjective. That makes it objective. You've got three clear violations, none of which are called. I don't think it's cowardice. I think it's a huge mistake that we need to correct.
All right, John. Appreciate the call.
Well, I hate to break it to John, but clear pass interference is still subjective. I don't think he knows the words.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't think there's anybody today that's saying that was not some type of foul.
But that's all of our – but in the moment when it happens in real time, that's where it's subjective. Objective is fact-based. I think people need to understand. Like, you're either offsides or you're not. The ball either touched the ground or it didn't. It either crossed the plane or it didn't. There's not – those are – we're getting into semantics now.
Yeah. We'll continue the semantics during the break. When we come back, Preds with a win against the Avs. One game left till the All-Star break. And speaking of one, a new number one in college basketball. Stay there.